right now. Dick Rowley, four men.
Thank you. Hello, folks, and welcome to the new improved Hudlines, the first of a new series, a radio blowout which even Reddit Air can't stop. It is a big week for Jim Callaghan this week. First, there's been the blow of the local election results and the Scotch nationalists getting in everywhere. What's Jim going to do about that, eh?
I remember what Robert the Bruce did.
You mean you're determined to fight on?
No, I'm going to hide in a cave.
Of course, quite a lot has been happening since we were last on the air. There was the news of Princess Anne's baby, for a start. They'll be calling him Mark II, of course. They'll already put his name down for Epsom. And then we had the budget, and cigarettes went up. Fortons for a packet of 20. Doesn't affect me, though. I'll buy mine in 10. Of course, Maggie Thatcher hasn't been able to stay out of the news for long. What with her visits to China? Did you see this picture of her on the ramparts? Mm-hmm. And the Chinese have offered her a job on the cable car there, driving people up the wall. And of course, there's been the usual crop of stupid stories this week. Did you read about the incident when the Minister for Art was hit in the face by a custard pie the other day? I hear the custard pie is to be exhibited in the Tate Gallery. The Minister said, I don't know much about tarts, but I know what I lick. Well, something we always get each week is a whole lot of reports. And there's one out which says that Britain has lost the will to lead and take the initiative. We're going to make a joke about that, but nobody could be bothered to think of one. There's another report which says that today's school leavers are better qualified than they were 10 years ago. Well, of course, 10 years ago they were only six, weren't they? And since last time, there's been the Annan Report on broadcasting. And that's very important to us here, you know, the Annan Report. But why anybody should take any notice of a committee headed by a panda is beyond me. There's also been a report that the Arabs have at last stopped buying up large areas of London. Well, they've got the set now, haven't they? I see the authorities are trying to clamp down on marriages of convenience. They say the vicars keep banging their heads on the system. One thing nobody could have missed is that it's Jubilee Year, and lots of famous people have been turning out to raise money for the appeal. Among them, Elton John. I'm doing the Jubilee concert, because I've got the Jubilee bug. I'm a sucker for anything royal. You might say I'm a Jubilee mug. I like all the trappings of glory. The regalia too, you can tell. All the pageantry, pomp and the glitter. The Queen ought to have some as well. And now it's time for the Hudlines Open Wine. And here is my guest, the TUC General Secretary, Len Plums-in-the-Mouth Murray.
Thank you very much, Chef.
Can we have the first caller, please?
Hello? Like, I'd just like to explain why I'm one of the voters who didn't turn out to vote in last week's by-election at Grimsby.
Why is that, madam?
Because I live in Reading.
Yeah, the next caller, please.
Hello? I want to stop all this knocking of British Rail by the media. I've just had a most pleasant train journey, and the steward even threw a coming-of-age party.
Splendid. Was it your birthday?
No, one of the sandwiches was 18.
Oh, hello. I'd just like to emphasize what I said in the House this week, that I want MPs to ask me harder questions during question time.
Ah, is that you, Mr. Callaghan?
Oh, steady, I'm not that hard.
Can we have the next caller, please?
Hello.
Hello?
Oh, just like I have to say, it's not right that our school leavers can't get jobs now. I've just left school this term and nobody wants me.
Really? Really? And what were you doing at school?
I was the headmaster at William Tyndale, wasn't I?
And the next caller, please.
It's the local elections, and I still can't make up my mind who to vote for.
Well, why not talk to your Liberal candidate?
I am the Liberal candidate.
And the next caller, please.
As managing director of a leading sweet manufacturer, I would just like to say that we are doing our bit in this export year. Why, only yesterday we received a large export order from the British government.
From the British government?
Yes. They've asked us to deliver a 3-ton gobstopper to Uganda.
Okay. Next caller, please.
Hello, my friend. Enoch Powell here. I would like to bring up this dangerous question of two-tier passports with secondary passports for our immigrant friends.
Well, what about it, Mr. Powell?
I would like to point out that if all the people in this country who have secondary passports were laid end-to-end along the M1...
Yes?
I would drive to Edinburgh on a steamroller. Thank you. And the next caller, please.
Oh, good evening. The other day... I read that French author Georges Simenon claimed to have made love to 10,000 women, and I want to tell you, as a patriotic Englishman, that after a tremendous effort, I've just beaten him. No, no, applause. I can't do an encore.
Well, I must say, that's an incredible thing to achieve in a lifetime.
Lifetime? Oh, God, I thought it was in a week.
This is the story of men who went to work filled with spirit, courage, and 6 pints of lager. Men who were prepared to fight valiantly for their rights and put up a pretty good struggle for their lefts and all. This is the story of the North Sea Troubleshooters. It was a calm, deceptively peaceful afternoon in May. Tory party officials were still celebrating the way they'd pulled off Wynne's in the election, and Wynne had just gone off to put another pair on. Out on the northeast coast, conservative leader and part-time model for Muppets, Mrs. Margaret Thatcher, was doing a breaststroke.
Wait, Margaret! You mustn't swim here. There are sharks in these waters.
But it was too late. The sharks were already dead. Further out to sea paddled Mrs. Thatcher until suddenly, for no apparent reason, she launched into a political speech.
Loyal Tory objects.
Of course she meant subjects.
I know what I mean. Labour are making a terrible hash of our economy when everyone knows I could do it a lot better.
Fortunately, I am convinced we shall do well in the local government election.
Enter. Dennis Healy, sir. All right, show him in, will you? No, I'm Dennis Healy. Are you really? Oh, well, perhaps they can operate. Anyway, I expect you've heard the latest news. The fact is this. Margaret Thatcher has just had a blowout. She's out there in the North Sea spouting her mouth off, and we've got to get out there and plug her before she says something sensible. That should give us quite a lot of time, then. Exactly. I'd like you now to meet the man who's going to help us complete this tough, desperate, and thoroughly silly mission. You can come in now.
Hi there, I'm Blue Adair.
Shouldn't it be red?
Well, it should be, but I've been taking a cold shower. Come on, boys, let's get going. We'll have that Mrs. Thatcher cap quicker than a Liberal can lose his deposit. Come on, boys, this way.
Never happen again. I promise
God,
you will work for
the
me.
Conditions are hellish on this woman.
But this will never...
The hot air, the sliminess, and look at that 150-mile-long oil slick. And that's just from her hair.
We've got to stop this woman gushing and polluting people's minds with Tory gunt.
That's right. She could explode at any moment and we'd all be killed.
Oh, don't worry. If it's a matter of dying, as far as I'm concerned, my country comes first.
Really?
Yes, first they can die, then me.
What? I don't want... I think I'm slowing her down now.
All of you to support me in this cause. I'm sure. Good evening.
Dolly, we've almost sealed her off now.
Can we shut her off completely, do you think?
That's risky, but I'm going to try and get her to put a sock in it. Dennis, pass me your sock.
Right, here you are.
Now, into her mouth with it.
And furthermore, I would like to save a...
Well done, Dennis boy. Why, I think that sock of yours in her mouth has shut her up at last.
Oh, good. Do you think I should take it off now?
No, we can't risk that.
Well, we've done it, Blue. Is she safe from explosion now?
Safe from explosion? Why, if she isn't, then I'll tell you I'm a monkey's uncle.
Oh, good. By the way, how is that nephew of yours, Gerald Ford, these days?
Oh, he's, And now for the hard political news of the week, we go over to Washington. Not Washington, D.C., but Washington, England, in County Durham. In fact, Washington, C.D. But C.D. or not, the town is preparing for his distinguished visitor, President James Earl Carter. And among the people turning out to meet him will be James Earl Callahan himself.
Hello. Hello. Welcome to Washington to you both.
How do you all? I'm Jimmy Carter, President of the United States. And this...
Hello.
...is my First Lady.
Yes, so I read in Playboy. I must say, I hardly recognize you in that outfit.
Well, don't you think it's fitting for the occasion to be dressed like Washington?
George Washington, yes, but Dinah, I'm not so sure.
It looks quite nice.
We're here in little old Washington, England, to trace our roots. And we were thinking that if Washington lived here, maybe the Carters did too. Dang me, Jimmy. Wouldn't it be good if we still had relations?
Hush your mouth, Hunapa. That's one thing I did manage to keep out of Playboy.
Just think, Jimmy. This is a place where Judge Washington would have lived if he'd ever lived here.
Yes, but unfortunately, he left here 200 years before he was born.
Yeah, honey. Now, ain't that exciting?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. By gosh sakes, I can almost hear him slashing against his father's cherry tree with his little chopper.
Tell me, Prime Minister, do you think there are any Carters here in Washington?
Well, look, we found this portrait.
What?
Look. This man is Wilfred Jackboot Carter, Washington, who emigrated to America at the time of the Civil War.
Did he fight for the North or the South?
He fought for both sides because he didn't want to get involved. Now, around the turn of the century, he had a great aunt. In fact, he had two aunts, but the other one wasn't so hot. She was Daisy Bell Hobnail Carter, who lived here in Washington, who was a real lady and lived in the fashionable part of town.
I know the kind.
Yes, always said, pardon me, before she emptied a chamber pot into the street.
Yes.
She married a Jasper Malpractice Carter in 1783, and we think there could be a connection there because of the teeth.
The teeth?
Yes, must be an inherited feature.
The teeth?
Yes, the Carter teeth. Look at this hunting picture of him on horseback. See the teeth?
Yep.
Now look at yours.
Identical.
Yes, that horse certainly had a lovely smile. Now, he had a son, a Mr. Jerome K. Eisenfart Carter, who had a son who had three daughters, whose uncle's cousin went to America and settled in Plains in Georgia with his mother's cousin, who married a woman old enough to be his wife. Now, he had a family of which the youngest son started a peanut farm, who had a son, who had a son, who had a son, and I don't have to tell you who that son was.
No, James Earl.
That's right, James Earl Washington.
Jimmy, there's nothing to connect us with that family.
The only thing I can suggest you do is talk to the only survivor of a very old Washington family who might connect you with the Washingtons. It might be a long shot, but his business is named after the first syllables of your two names.
And what business is that?
It's the car wash.
Didn't make the papers.
The London Palladium announced this morning that they have signed up an exciting new one-man variety act, using a man who plays the concertina and acts accordionly.
A Pakistani streaker was arrested last night in Birmingham and charged under the Obscene Public Asians Act.
After living for 6 weeks on a diet of nothing but tomato ketchup, a Huddersfield man was rushed to hospital this morning, but found to be red on arrival.
Police today have been dragging the round pond, but they only got it as far as Marble Arch when the rope broke.
In Hove yesterday, a well-known numerologist woke up at 7 o'clock, had lunch with seven people, and then found that in the seventh race at Seven Oaks, there were seven runners. So he put £77 on horse number seven. Sure enough, the horse came in seventh.
Dr. Arthur Laburnum, a former dentist, has been disciplined for improper conduct with female patients. He's forever asking them to take a deep breath, looking down their blouses and saying these two will have to come out for a start. Harold Wilson was robbed again last week. He's been burgled so often these days that the thieves ring up to make appointments. Let's see how the investigation is progressing.
Ah, oh, come in, Inspector. Care for a coffee?
I do, thank you, Sir Harold.
Brandy, cigar, peerage.
Peerage?
Yes, I've got a few left over from last Christmas.
No, thank you. Now, what exactly is this in?
Well, so far as I can tell, only a few sentimental mementos, such as my favorite photo of George Brown doing the hokey-cokey at the opening of Parliament, a wax effigy of Joe Haynes, the receipt for my grandmother, and...
Harold, I can't find any of my poems.
Oh, and about 300 reams of waste paper. I do feel jolly about that. I can say quite positively that the thief would not have found any secret papers of an incriminating nature.
Glad to hear it, sir.
Yes, they were all stolen in previous burglaries.
How many burglaries have you had then, sir?
Oh, let me think now, 34, that's right, one in each house. Mind you, I think Mary positively encourages them.
I guess to lock up when she goes to bed, does she, sir?
No, it's not so much that. It's more the glasses of hot milk and plates of Marmite sandwiches she leaves out of an evening. If you'll follow me, I'll show you to the office where the theft took place. Until recently, the door was always guarded by my faithful Labrador Paddy, but unfortunately, we had Wedgie round last week, and there was rather a nasty case of savaging. So we had to have him put down.
Oh, it's very sad for you, sir.
Yes, even sadder for Mrs. Ben, I'm afraid. The dog's been off his food ever since, too.
Well, I think we found our first clue, sir. Look at these deep, file-like marks on the combination dial of your safe.
No, I can explain those. You see, whenever Lady Falkender threw a tantrum, she used to chew on that.
See, well, I can't promise any results, but please... May I ask you, sir, seeing as how you've been burgled every night for the last week, will you please make sure that tonight you lock all your windows and doors?
Yes, Inspector. I give you my solemn promise on that.
Oh, dear. Well, in that case, I'll see you tomorrow.
Well, there's been a lot of interest in telly about, hasn't there, eh? London Weekend have sold another series of The Fosters. The BBC have sold their series Slavery to America. The Americans have sold Roots to the BBC. And Enoch Powell sold his television set. So this Roots thing could catch on, you know. Like this, for instance. We present One Man's Search for the Roots of All Evil, starring Dennis Healy. Roots. begins in the front bedroom of a terraced house in the little mining village of Grime under Nails. Baby Dennis is about to utter his first sign.
Hello, everybody. Hey, Mother, I'm right proud of thee. Just look. Fancy our very own daughter.
It's a boy, Dad. He's laid on his front.
Oh. So it is. Hey, I can tell he's a healy. Look. He's trying to get his little hand in me pocket. Please, let me watch off. He's a lad.
Hey, little scamp.
All me rings as well. He's a boy.
Did you mean it, Dad, when you said you were proud of me, even though it is a boy?
Yes, I did, Mother.
Because I know you had your heart set on it.
No, lass, I can always get a whip at some other time.
Wouldn't it be grand if our new baby could grow up to be a chancellor and rid the country of inflation?
Oh, that it would, Mother. We could stand up in community and tell the world that that's our son.
Historical note, Mr. and Mrs. Healy are now in South America living under assumed names.
This, then, was the working-class background that young Dennis was raised in. He saw the squalor, the hardships and the poverty that was endured by his family. It was then that he swore, if he ever became Chancellor, squalor, hardships and poverty would be endured by every family. From an early age, he was taught the value of money.
Now then, young Dennis, if I found a pound note and a shilling in straight and offered you one or t'other, which one would you have?
Let me see. Bearing in mind the capital gains tax on unearned income, graduated pension contribution and gift annuities taxed at source, I think I'd be better off with the shilling. But as you haven't paid me the rent this week, I'll take both.
At school, Dennis was the brightest boy in class, simply because other boys kept setting fire to him. He left school at 11, rose quickly to 18 and a half, slumped back to 14.2, and finally settled at 15.75, and got his first job as a leather stretcher in the local tannery, which brought him his first wage.
Hey, mister, you've made a mistake with my wages.
What do you mean, lad?
According to a quick calculation of my coding number, I should be paying much more tax than this.
Well, that was our Dennis. Patriotic, loyal, stupid. The life and soul of any stockbroker's funeral. Times were hard and the Depression era was really hitting below the belt. Inflation was soaring to such an extent that the tannery had to change into a half-crownery.
Just to stay in business.
Poor Dennis was made redundant.
I'm sorry, lad. Now's redundant. They'll have to go.
What, right now? I can't go right now.
Why not?
I've got my eyebrows caught in this pulley, silly pulley.
Dennis was now the same age as a mature man. Then he decided to go to London to seek a job. With his belongings in a shoebox and his didgeridoo in his tucker bag, he set off.
Now don't forget what you told me, Dennis. We might be poor, but we're honest. So if I was ever in a tight corner, surrounded with enemies, hold your head up high, wear a smile and...
And?
Blame everything on Ruddy Tory.
In next month's episode, the celebration of Dennis Healy's maiden speech, where Dennis gets thoroughly hissed. Newts. Well, finally, the best bit of news, as far as some people are concerned, is the big new swing for the Conservatives. Well, it gives them something to play on when they come home from Parliament. But most of all, the recent by-election victories mean that the leader of the opposition has now really got something to sing about.
My name is Maggie Thatcher. I'm the leader of the band. At last the country's seeing sense, and now they understand. I'll be their next Prime Minister. In fact, I'll stop at naught. I'll speak to number 10.
Oh, blimey, what an evil foe.
We're watching, going, and we drink our gin.
We all fall on the floor.
We all make claims to positive aim.
But no one's really sure.
Go up with Callaghan, all of his charabans.
Come and lend a hand. The glory that is Tory.
No Curtis Maggie Thatcher's band.
After last week's victory at Ashfield, I really let my hair down. It made such a nice change. Normally, it's my hair that lets me down.
My name is Willie Whitelaw. I think Maggie is a wow. Too long she's kicked her heels, especially me and Jeffrey Howe.
When I'm PM, I meet the Queen, but one thing I would stress. There won't be any kneeling. It might dirty up her dress.
So our gin's going and we drink our gin.
And we all fall on the floor.
We all make claims for positive aims.
Well, no one's really sure.
Out with Callahan, all of his shadowbanks.
Come and lend a hand. The glory that is Tory.
That is Maggie, that is Van.
As far as we in the government are concerned, these have been goodbye elections. We've had to say goodbye to this election, goodbye to that election, goodbye to... Oh, no, for myself, you know.
My recent trip to Peking really thrills me through and through. The art...
Do you like red china?
No, most of mine is blue.
Although we loved our Tory guest, one thing struck us as queer. That Mr. Heath has changed his hairstyle since he was last here.
Tell me, what did you make of my husband, Dennis?
About 25 chop sueys and 10 portions of sweet and sour.
These victories have put our party back there on the map. For I confess I find it fun when seats land in my lap.
So come on all you Tory party members in the land. With crutches, canes and walking sticks, we'll show them how we stand. I say, isn't it wonderful about the Tory voters, Margaret?
Oh, yes. I'm so excited that they've started to turn out.
Never mind. If you wear a baggy sweater, no one will notice, will it? With all these Tory gains, Jim Callaghan is feeling sick.
Oh.
It seems that all his policies have failed to do the trick.
He's right, you know. I haven't had such a shock as this since the day I suddenly found myself Prime Minister. Last Thursday, I think it was.
Oh, there's only one way he'll win the day. Oh, wouldn't it be grand to pass a law and make damn sure that Maggie Thatcher's banned.
Yes, pass the law and make damn sure Maggie Thatcher's banned.
That was the news headline starring Roy Hudd with Janet Brown, Chris Emmett, and the Nick Rowley Quartet. The script was written by David Renwick and Peter Spence with Andy Hamilton, Laurie Rowley, Douglas Adams, and Fred Metcalf. Additional material by Colin Elliott, Howard Imber, Keith Rawnsley, Peter Long, David Day, Gerald Marlowe, David Wilson, Agnes Kennett, and Robert Belford. The program was produced by John Lloyd.